Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 117. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation. Dave, we are officially under 1 week until day one of the 2024 NFL draft kicks off. And I'm really in that. Okay, speculation time. I have speculated as much as I can possibly speculate. Let's get this show on the road. Let's find out who these picks are.
I am in the phase of speculating my speculation. I'm in that danger zone where I try to start outthinking myself now. I'm in that phase of it right now. And you keep trying to do some deep dives of when you think players will be there and matching them up with big boards from other, draft nicks that you kind of trust and all like that. And, just trying to map out, get things initially mapped out of what I think is the perfect mock draft, which there is no such animal. it's like a unicorn out there, that kind of thing. So, yeah, like most people probably listening to this thing, just ready to see who the new Steelers players are and get into the post-draft phase of digging even deeper into the tape of those players and those kind of things there. But that won't stop us from still speculating and those kind of things and getting mock drafts ready or written up and those kind of things. We'll have a full slate of those coming on the site here. I think even one started today, Scott Pavel, I think, has got one up, doesn't he? With that. But before we even get started here, I don't know how many people listening, obviously it was quite a few. I think at one point you had 400 some people on there last night, but that walk, the live stream of the walk, the mock, that you did on Thursday night, man, if they gave out awards or some sort of, end of year awards for those things, man, you should certainly win one for that, because you had one of the members or one of the team owners taking part of that kept spamming you over 100 time trade offers. So you had to put up with that. I think you had a couple of kind of belligerent people in the chat kind of trolling you as well too. So I kept wishing along as that thing went on. I kept thinking to myself, man, I should wish Alex drank, because he might need a couple of stiff belts, if you will, after doing that. But I thought you stayed really, really composed, and you eventually got the guy to stop spamming you, and you worked through kind of a mock that went off the rails early because of computer picks, I guess. But kudos to you. It ended up making for good cinema overall.
We love the internet, the good, the bad, the ugly. This mock draft had all of it, but the final results were a lot of fun. Spoilers for anybody who doesn't want to have the picks tipped and you didn't get to watch it live. The replay's up on the Steelers Depot website right now, but we got our center, Dave. I think we pulled off the way that Pittsburgh might do this thing come draft weekend. Got the tackle in the first round, J.C. Latham, falling to us at number 20, and then we traded up 11 spots in the second round to get Zach Frazier to get our center. So that is certainly one way that Pittsburgh could approach this thing during draft weekend if they go tackle in the first round. But again, that urgency of feeling like you have to get one of those top three centers, it was there in our first walk the mock mock draft. I did not get a center. Things did not go well, but this time we got our guy.
Yeah, that's what muddies this thing all up, especially if you're trying to build the perfect or what you know, most several, not most, probably several people would deem as the perfect mock draft in this situation. You know, trying to come out of it with a center, with one of the top three centers or perceived top three centers in the first two rounds. We've had discussions about, man, what does it look like if you do go tackle in the first round? And you know, we've looked at other teams that could potentially maybe, you know, use centers before the Steelers pick again in the second round. Would that require a trade up? And if you do that, how does that impact the rest of your quote unquote needs positionally? The rest of the mock draft or the rest of the entire draft. So there's still a lot of conversation there. So I mean, is that where we want to start today? Is the tackle center discussion or what? How do you have this thing mapped out?
Not well. In our pre-production two-hour meeting that we had, I didn't have a good thought here. But I mean, I know we've talked about it just throughout the course of our conversations a lot, center discussions, tackle discussions. But I think really what it boils down to, the most likely scenario we know is Pittsburgh will address the offensive line at number 20 or somewhere in the first round. The question becomes, and it's always the really tricky one, is it center or is it tackle? And you can make a case for both. At center, an immediate need there, immediate void. You know, internally, your options are few and uninspiring, and they all have their problems. But a tackle, you can quote unquote say it has more positional value. You could say there's maybe better talent at tackle than there is at center, and you get the chance to move over Broderick Jones from the right side to the left side. So just thinking about just kind of big picture, what do you think should be this team's bigger priority, finding the center right away or finding the tackle right away?
Yes. And I know that's not what you want to hear, but look, here's what I was thinking. Can this team win games and make a playoff push with the two tackles they currently have?
I would say yes. You can. I made that point before. You can win with your tackles in their current setup.
I would agree. As much as I will have moments of, you know, gritting my teeth along the way there, especially if you can have an offense where the ball, you know, what is one of the things that we've talked about with this rebuilt quarterback room and Arthur Smith and the top two quarterbacks specifically now, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and what we think that they want to get done offensively and what these two quarterbacks have had issues with in their careers to date. You're probably going to want to get the ball out regardless quick of who your tackles are, correct?
Sure, but that's
in the passing game.
Right, but it's a good counterpoint because you know that Fields and Wilson hold on to the ball, and so it's not like with Kenny Pickett where the ball is coming out more rhythmically and quicker overall. You really want to make sure you have the best tackles possible to protect those guys.
Sure, and we're not just holding a joystick on each play too, and forcing them to get the you take the kid out of the trailer park, but you can't take the trailer park out of the kid sometimes too. So there are going to be issues, you know, along the way with that, and it'll probably never be out as quick as what you know we want it in a lot of times there. But it goes back to the initial thought there. Here's the second part of the question. With what they have as far as center goes right now, does it feel like this team can accomplish what they want to accomplish on offense and win games and make a playoff push?
It would give me a lot of concern based on what they currently have, but I guess the thought is, can you win not just with what you have internally, but can you win if you get the plan B center? You get the third, fourth round center of a Van Pran Granger or Norzad or somebody like that. So if you imagine that name into the mix too, does that change my answer? Does that change your answer? I'm not quite sure, but that would be, I think, the whole consideration. Because they're going to draft a center at some point. They're not going to just not draft the center at all, even if they don't do it until, say, the third round. They don't get one of the top three guys. They're going to get somebody. And so I guess you have to factor him into that equation as well.
I mean, I would feel a lot better if they had one of the top three centers about
it. Of course, of course.
And I would grit my teeth along the way with the two tackles that they have, you know, and you know, with Broderick playing right and Dan Moore playing left, and then maybe at some point during this draft, if you did go center in the first round, you could get a developmental, you know, a second tier tackle in this class that maybe surprises you and allows him to play on the right side, and then allows you to shift Broderick Jones over to left at some point during the season. But, you know, even, you know, another discussion on top of a discussion, if you want to start going down rabbit holes here, is, you know, Dane Brugler was on a show earlier this week, and it's hard to disagree with him. I mean, even though this tackle class is deep or deepish, once you get past those initial five or six of them, it does drop off.
Yeah, it's like center, where if you wait on a tackle in round one, in round two, what are you going to have? It's not going to be a lot, especially when you're looking, I think, primarily for a right tackle, somebody with that experience there, where if they came in, you know, they could be more comfortable there to potentially move over Broderick Jones. Of course, the later the pick, the less likely that'll happen out of the gate, but that's the type that they're looking for. There are some names in Blake Fisher, I think Roger Rosengarten from Washington as well, but the tackle class is good, but the NFL knows that, and those tackles don't stay on the board. Good tackles go off the board really quickly.
Right, right. As far as messiness goes, from a outsider mock, what each of us might deem as the perfect mock draft goes, it's a lot less messier when addressing other perceived positions of need, if this team went center with the first pick and then went on from there. It feels like, look, I you know, you got a gift in that mock draft the other Thursday night in Latham falling. I mean, do you expect a guy like Latham, who's probably perceived as a little bit more NFL ready, instantly out of shoot, than a guy like Mims?
Do I expect him to be there at 20? Right. I don't. I'm not going to say that's impossible, but the odds would be, I think, pretty clearly against it happening.
Right. And as much upside as Mims appears to have, you know, is he plug and play, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, the eight starts obviously is concerning. I think ideally whoever takes him has a bit more of a longer developmental curve with him, just given the lack of experience. But it's not that he's untalented, or like, I don't even think his tape was super raw or unrefined. There's some things to work on. So again, you can really kind of discuss, you know, how that goes. You take Broderick Jones last year, who played more, but hadn't played a ton of football either, and you felt like he could have been a day one type of guy. So there's a big discussion on top of all that.
All right. Well, back to the parent discussion on, you know, with this, it's, I mean, you can make great arguments to go tackle with that pick, especially if a guy like Mims is still on the board then. Now, look, I don't want to have to worry about shoeholing a non-perfect measurable guy or a left tackle in college over to the right side. You know, I ideally want a right tackle that fits what the Steelers look for if that pick is going to be, if that first round pick is going to be a tackle. And you would probably agree with that, right?
You're saying to get a right tackle or somebody with the experience on that side of the football?
Well, what I'm saying is I don't want just any tackle there at 20th overall.
Yeah, sure. You want the guy that fits your scheme. And again, you want somebody who ideally has been playing on the right side so that, you know, they're comfortable to slide in to start training camp. And so you can try to move Broderick Jones over to left tackle out of the gate.
When it comes down to it, what is the biggest hole of those two positions that this team has right now, center or right tackle?
It is center, I think, for sure. But again, it goes back to, are you okay with keeping Broderick Jones on the right side when it's probably the best thing for him and for your team to move him over? Are you doing harm by your first round pick last year by keeping him on the right side? And is tackle more important to have that set well and right than center? Can you mask center a bit more than you could at tackle?
Yeah, but it feels like if this team wants to do what they want to do in the running game, they're going to have an upgraded center from what they have right now.
Sure, there's no question. The question is, though, in the passing game, do you need to be stronger tackle on left tackle? If you had really, two strong tackles, then your foundation or your line in terms of everything, kind of falls into place. But I also will say in Pat Meyer's system, the center works on not uncovered, but one-on-one more often. The guards are giving the tackles more help when they're uncovered. And so the center is responsible for more, again, solo blocks and pass protection than other systems. And that becomes really important to have a center that can really anchor and pass protect.
I mean, is there a perfect answer to this question? Probably not. I mean,
no.
You get a top tackle and a top center in your first two picks, and then you worry about the rest of the draft as you go on, and maybe that's the way that they're going to think here is, here's what we think we know. At 20th overall, assuming they stay put, it's going to be an offensive lineman. The second part of it goes is if it's a tackle in round one, it certainly does feel like it would be quite a gamble to sit there at 51 overall and hope one of those three centers falls to you.
It would be. And so that goes back to the idea, do you try to trade up, back up 10, 11 spots as our live mock draft stream showed last night to get a center? That's ideal. But of course, that has a million factors in where will these centers fall? How far will they drop? Will Frazier be a late first round guy? Is Paris Johnson an ideal fit for your system? There's a lot of layers to that whole conversation.
It sure would make us feel a little bit better had they been able to address the center position in free agency with a guy that may or may not have to play the full season there.
Why do you think they didn't?
Just historically, you knew that if they were going to address this position in the draft, which they were going to probably do regardless, they weren't going to dip all 10 toes into the free agency situation with the position and go someone, and go as high as what, say, Mitch Morse got from the Jaguars and all like that. They weren't going to go all in at that position to get some of those top guys there. I really think that maybe they thought they were going to steal Mitch Morse in this situation and really didn't have much of a backup plan after that, after him leaving town.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think their intent was to always draft the center, and they didn't want to spend a lot of money on a veteran that would kind of block that rookie from coming in. I think they want that longer-term option. I think ultimately what it came down to was, instead of signing kind of that lower-level veteran name that I thought they might go after, or Bradley Bozeman or somebody of that similar caliber, Nate Herbig is their veteran center internal guy. And I know he's been a guard his career, but obviously they think highly enough of him. He was the backup center last year to mention him so many times when Marcon has about, hey, Herbig's in the mix here. So I think they figured there's not much of a difference between signing a Bozeman or Michael Dieter or somebody like that compared to Herbig. So we'll just roll with Herbig, and you do have Spencer Anderson as well, and we'll go draft somebody, and that'll be the veteran rookie competition of Herbig versus draft pick.
Right. And maybe we're not giving Herbig enough respect, but there's not a lot of tape out there at center to give him respect for.
Yeah. Again, how many snaps did he play at center last preseason? Because he had gotten hurt against Tampa Bay in the preseason opener. He had been getting work there later in camp, and in the opener, I think played maybe 9 or so snaps. And then whatever the injury was, he missed the rest of the preseason. So obviously he got work, I'm sure, in practice, but that is just that practice. But I think that's their standpoint of why they decided to not add a veteran equivalent, because Herbig, in their mind, is that guy.
Let me see if I can pull this up real quick.
I know we had talked about it before, but I just forget. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't many snaps, obviously.
He had nine preseason snaps at center in preseason game number one.
Yeah, and then he got hurt and didn't play the rest of the other two preseason games. So, but I think that's why they did what they did or did not do what they did not do in terms of adding another name at center.
The previous preseason when he was with, who was he with the year before Eagles?
Eagles, yeah.
Before he was traded to the...
from the Jets.
Yeah, from the... Anyway, he had 16 in the preseason in 2022. And during the 2022 regular season, he did not play any snaps, center snaps at all. And what about 2021? He played all of 47 snaps at center in 2021 regular season.
Okay. I wasn't even aware. I don't know if I was even aware that he did that then.
Yeah, so I've got it notated somewhere.
Okay.
In an article that I did last year about the center position and all like that. And then look, you roll back to some of the things Omar Khan has said earlier this offseason. We owe it to something along the lines, paraphrasing here, we owe it to ourselves to get the to find the Steelers' next great center, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, look, if Nate Herbig has to play a lot of snaps at center in 2024, something probably has gone sideways, right?
Probably, but I mean, they're kind of putting themselves in a position where that right. is a possibility.
Do you remember a time in recent time here where this team has left themselves a little bit more vulnerable to need at a certain positions, heading in, you know, with a week to go ahead of the draft?
I mean, I know in 21, what did they have at running back entering that draft when we all kind of assumed that Najee was going to be the guy? The only question was a little bit of if he would fall to Pittsburgh. But what was the running back depth chart? James Conner, he walked. They let him go to Arizona. I forget who was on the roster then, but I assume it wasn't anything, you know, pretty.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point there.
But it was different because you felt like we knew who the guy was. There wasn't a question about is what running back are they going to like? Is it ETN or Harris? We knew they liked Harris more than ETN. And you felt more confident about him being there because of the devaluation of the running back position.
Plus, everybody knows running back's a fungible position anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So they, you know, Pittsburgh probably felt pretty safe. We're gonna get our guy there. This can't really go wrong.
To me, Alex, it's once again in my own head, and obviously they have thought this out, you know, a lot more than we have. It feels a lot less messier, especially for the rest of the draft, if you go center first. Now, here's the thing, too. Until Graham Barton came in for a visit, did it even – you know, I know there's some reports out there from Duke, Merriweather, and others saying, you know, Frazier's a – don't be surprised if Frazier goes in the first round. And, look, they very well might value Zach Frazier – more than anybody else does, talking about the Steelers, and you know, they might just have him circled at 20th overall. I'd be a bit surprised if that was the case. It feels a little early for him there, but maybe they just like him and love him and think that is, you know, rankings be damned, that's our guy, that's who we love, you know. Right. And if they show the conviction in that, then, you know, raise your glass to it, you know. But until Graham Barton was brought in, didn't it feel like it was only going to be tackle?
Yeah, I mean, based on the tea leaves and the breadcrumbs and Blue's Clues, because I don't think it's going to be Paris Johnson. I just don't think he's the ideal scheme fit. And it was even in the Bob McGinn, he talks to scouts every year. This is not part of the Ty Dunn go long Substack. Scouts weighed in on Paris Johnson, who was the number one center, but there was one scout that remarked he didn't think Johnson or Paris Johnson was a fit for the wide zone system, just not, you know, a great athletic fit overall and kind of working in space consistently. And we know Arthur Smith, while his scheme will be varied, is, you know, foundationally based in a wide zone system. I said for a while, and I don't want to forget it, I think they really like Zach Frazier. I think he is like an ideal type of center that they can work with, the toughness, the run blocking, the experience, the plug and play nature of him. I mean, I have no question that they certainly are fans of Zach Frazier.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would agree that if they go tackle at 20th overall, and Frazier falls out of the first round. And assuming Barton comes off the board, Frazier's going to be the guy they go up to go get.
Yeah, I think that's a really good plan about that. You'd be happy to know, too, in that go-long series, Barton was listed with the guards, the second-best guard, and there were a lot of scouts saying, don't move this guy to center, play him at guard. So it felt like maybe Dave Ryan is a pseudo-scout for Bob McGinn.
Well, here's the thing here, and as much as I would like to pat myself on the back and say that I think he projects better at guard than anything else. He has not played any guard.
Sure.
In other words, I have to have the flexibility to also allow him, you know, the benefit of the doubt that he could also be a great center. Because he actually played that position, albeit back in 2020, at Duke. And we don't have any guard tape to go off of, but we have center tape to go off. It goes back to me and the measurables. And look, he's probably not going to be a tackle at the NFL level. And when you have guys 6'5" that move the way he does, that actually has the tape that he has at tackle, the logical progression for a tackle, if he does not play tackle but can move, is to kick inside and all like that. But for me to say that it should be guard or nothing else would be bias on my part, because of the fact if we had a lot of guard tape to go off of, or at least some equal amount of center tape or guard tape as he played center at Duke to go off of, I could just substantiate that a little bit more. But I have to give, because his measurables and all do match up with some of the bigger centers around the league, in fact, better than probably than most of those guys tested coming out. Anyway, I have to allow him, I have to, within that, say, you know, guard and center might be his best position.
Sure. It was just good to hear, you know, some other thoughts about guard, because I agree there should be some discussion about that. But my whole point has basically been, you know, if Pittsburgh drafts him, it's to play center.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of, you know, obviously the focus there.
I was going to ask you this the other night, I think on the live streaming, and somehow we went down another hole here. What's the worst case scenario with Graham Barton if you drafted him to play center and you didn't like what you got there?
Yeah, it's a fair question. The question is, you know, why is he not playing well at center? Is it a snapping issue? If it's that, then okay, maybe you feel like you can just move him to potentially guard. Is it?
You know, some people issue? Might struggle patting their head and rubbing their tummy at the same time. But if you just tell them just to pat their head, they're perfect at it. You know,
that's a good phrase. I like that a lot. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I know obviously Pittsburgh seems pretty settled at guard right now. We'll see about James Daniels' future. He's going last year of his contract. Isaac Seumalo is how old? How old is Seumalo? 30, about 30 years old. He is going to turn 31 in October. So again, it depends on the why, but you know, there would be some options, I think, if Barton is not playing well at center, and let's assume it's for a kind of center-specific reason.
And even though Barton once again played, you know, 400 something snaps at Duke in the 5 or 6 games there in 2020, I mean, at its core, though, he's still a projection guy overall.
Sure, there's no question about that. There is more of a projection kind of leap you're taking than compared to Jackson Powers Johnson or certainly Zach Frazier. But I think Barton has the traits. I think he has the IQ, the work ethic. He has been repping center throughout the pre-draft process. He understands where his NFL projection is likely to go. And there is at least a background there. I mean, he did do it, you know, for not the bulk, but half of his freshman season. And so it's not completely new to him the way it would be for Troy Fontenot, who's been viewed as a potential center candidate.
Who doesn't seem thrilled about the notion about him having to kick inside, period.
Right. But if a team drafts him and tells him to, he'll be getting the snapping right away because you don't have much of a choice there.
Whereas if you roll back to what Barton said, he feels like he's more, you know, whatever the team asked me to do. If you roll back to, I think, some of his combine interview stuff, mm-hmm. and all like that. But All right, so let's rewind back to the top here. I mean, it feels like it at this point. It feels like the pick is going to be Mims or Barton, right?
I don't know if I'm at that point in terms of narrowing it down. I mean, do you totally discount their interest in Fuaga and Fontenot? I haven't come in on specific names yet. My mock draft, my final one, will come out Tuesday, and so I'll let you guys know where I come in on by then.
All right, is Joe Ault? Let's roll through the tackles real quick. Do we consider Joe Ault a true tackle? The answer is yes.
Yes.
Fashanu out of Penn State. Do we consider him a full fledged tackle? Yes. J.C. Latham.
Some have considered him at guard because of the lack of maybe athleticism on the edges, but he'll get a first crack at tackle for sure.
Okay, but there might maybe be a little bit of a question there of how some teams maybe see him?
A little bit. I know in that bum again, there was a reference or two to him at guard, but we'll put him in the tackle camp.
All right, what about Fuaga?
Yeah, I think that's where we kind of start talking about the what is he? Is he a tackle? Get the, you know, right on the benchmark at length of just over 33 inches. There's been some guard talk with him, so it's kind of really a mixed bag.
Fontenot.
Yeah, again, it sounds like he's all over the map. Some at tackle, some at guard, some at center. So there is no great clarity on his NFL position.
All right, then you get into Mims, who undeniably is a tackle.
Yeah, he's not going to be a 6'8 guard for sure.
I guess where I'm going with this is, I mean, if there's teams that are tackle needy and right and really right tackle specific needy, and you got Ault and Fashanu who are left tackles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there draft boards out there that have Amarius Mims as a third tackle on their board?
That's possible. And again, you get past the experience, the tape, the upside is tantalizing. Could there be teams that would want to move, Ault hypothetically or Fashanu over to right tackle? Maybe. I mean, we've seen that happen and play out before. Pittsburgh just did it with Broderick Jones unexpectedly, but it happened.
All right. Well, let's assume that Ault and Fashanu out of Penn State are both off the board by 15, which they should be. You would think they would be. What about that run from 16 up until 20 of any team that might need a tackle?
Yeah, who the teams on the board? I know the Bengals are at 18.
I think you named the Bengals, yeah.
So that's a team to, I think, just watch O-line. Again, I think D-line is also just as likely, if not more, but I think that's a team to watch. The Rams should be good, I think, overall on O-line. I probably wouldn't expect that.
Well, they definitely don't need interior.
Right, after signing Dotson.
They got two guards and they're moving Velia over to center. So they're not going to go interior or anything close to that. Early in the first several rounds of this draft, but how are they looking at tackle?
They got Havenside on the right side. I think a little shakier on the left side there. So I don't want to necessarily say they couldn't, but it probably feels they're probably going to look to replace Aaron Donald with one of those deep tackles if somebody's there. That's my guess.
Okay.
You got Jacksonville at 17. They drafted Anton Harrison the first round last year. They got Cam Robinson. They're good at tackle. Maybe you could get an upgrade at guard, but I wouldn't expect them to go O-line in the first round.
All right. Who's next?
You got Seattle at 16 as the other team from that 16 to 19 range that you referenced. They have drafted Abraham Lucas a couple years ago. It's a new regime, so it's kind of maybe some different uncertainty there. They just signed Lakin Tomlinson. They got a hole at center and guard, and that's a potential team I would look at.
For a tackle?
Less tackle, more interior. That could be maybe a Barton if they wanted to, or Fontenot if they were trying to try to convert him inside.
All right. Who's after that?
Well, then that's back to Seattle at 16, Jacksonville 17, Cincinnati 18, the Rams 19, okay. And then Pittsburgh at 20. So that kind of runs through. So I think the Bengals, maybe Seattle, are teams to watch right ahead of Pittsburgh in terms of O-line need.
Okay. All right. I think it comes down to it feels a lot messier if you go center at 20 and then try to address the tackle position with a mid-tier guy, you know, third, fourth round, something like that.
Yeah, but if you go center, you know you can really picture who your starting five are if you take the center in round one. If you go right. Tackle, again, trying to figure out even for sure if that tackle is going to start right away, if he's a bit of a project, a projection like a Mims, and then you wonder what the heck's going to happen at center.
Right, and there's no guarantee, you know, unless you go up in the second round, and even then, you know, you're not guaranteed just to push the Madden button, you know. It's going to be something we all struggle with between now and draft day. Will it be tackle or center?
Yeah, again, that's the million-dollar question. Wish we had the answer to that. If we all knew what the answer would be, our drafts and our jobs would be a lot easier. But to me, that's the main question. Tackle or center, and just in general, how do they handle the center position are the biggest questions for Pittsburgh entering the draft.
You have the centers ranked Barton, Frazier, JPJ, right?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Right. Any thought of JPJ slipping till 51? That still feels rich.
Yeah, again, knowing centers fall, it still feels rich. And I just wonder if he's an ideal scheme fit. Now, if he's here at 51, he's hard to turn down just because right. of the talent. And, you know, you maybe tweak the system a little bit. But I'm not going in with the plan that any of those centers will be there at 51.
What are the chances that they go another position other than center tackle in the first round?
You never want to rule it out. I think it's certainly on the less likely end of things. But what if there is a big run of tackles, and what if you're not sold on Barton at center? I mean, if it's not, then I think it's got to be corner, because I don't know what else it would be unless they love Darius Robinson. But I just don't think that's going to be right. quite the case. So I think you look at a Nate Wiggins, Cooper DeJean, whatever Terry and Arnold were to fall. If there was a big run on offensive linemen ahead of you, of receivers, those are kind of the secondary thoughts that I have literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if they go outside of those two positions. But, you know, I guess stranger things have happened. All right, that's enough, I think, on that discussion there.
Yeah, let's go back to our kind of what they look for studies. Last time we had covered, or previously episodes, I think Monday, Wednesday, we'd done the tackles, the receivers, and the DNs. I've done since the inside linebackers in the interior offensive linemen, the guards and centers. I will do at least corners, and I know that'll be a big one. I got to take some time, get in the new data on Trison Porter there and see how things change. And inside linebacker, unfortunately, only one player checked every box. And it's not one we've talked about much. It's Tyrese Knight from UTEP, who just made the height requirement, ran well, good testing overall. He's probably going to be a day three type of guy. He will get drafted, but not somebody that Pittsburgh has shown much public interest in.
The thing with him is he was a Senior Bowl kid, wasn't he?
I think. I forget not being at the Senior Bowl this year. So that'll help a little bit.
I think I went and looked. I think he's a Senior Bowl kid. And I think also a couple of those guys that were just like a box or so away were also Senior Bowl kids. So,
yeah, Knight was a Senior Bowl guy. I just double checked there. So that helps a little bit.
Right. So, I mean, if you got and look, as much as we track these pre-draft visitors list and all like that, not all their picks, especially when you get into the later rounds. If you go back, I did a quick look back recently, you know, more times than not, the visitors that come in are the guys that are picked in the first few rounds.
Yeah, I think generally that's how it's been. There are some exceptions. I know Mark Robinson came in for a visit a couple of years ago, but yeah, the later in the draft, the more spread out things get, the less likely that guy's going to, you know, be an obvious candidate to be selected by Pittsburgh.
Now, one thing though, and also with there being a smaller group of underclassmen this year, it makes it even a stronger bet that nearly all, if not all, of these guys that they drafted, not underclassmen, will have played in either the senior or participated or been at least invited to the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Bowl.
Yeah, when you have a senior heavier class, and plus isn't the Senior Bowl letting in even some underclassmen now too? And so they've expanded and relaxed some of their rules. And so there's just more opportunities for even underclassmen to get some of that pre-draft exposure.
All right. You know, just some names that stick out on the linebacker list. I mean, obviously Edger and Cooper, someone that I know Josh Carney was hot on him early on in the offseason. With Jeremiah Trotter Jr. was a guy that was obviously has the bloodlines, was showing up in the early pre-draft process as a potential first round pick. I think a lot of people realize that that's not going to happen now, but if you got into the, you know, fourth round or whatnot, he's still on the board. He could be a prospect for sure. Edwafon Ulofosio out of Washington. I butchered that name for everybody there. He's more of a day three kind of guy. I believe he was a Senior Bowl guy as well too there. So it would not be shocking. And the guys that Curry showed up at the pro days with Gray out of North Carolina and who was the one at Kentucky?
Trevin Wallace.
Yeah. Those guys obviously are more middle round type guys that if you got in a pinch and that's the direction that you want, you could see those guys going. So I think the Tyrese Knight and these one box away guys mixed in with the Wallace and Gray, there's a really good chance that if they draft a linebacker, it'll come out of that group of guys.
Yeah, I'm really confident they will draft an off-ball linebacker. One guy that made the one-box-away list that Pittsburgh has shown interest in is Tommy Eichenberg from Ohio State, and he didn't make it only because he did not run the 40. I'm guessing he would have cleared the 4.80 bar to make it. I think he's fast enough to hit that mark most linebackers are, although Trotter was not. He ran a 4.82 apparently. So that's notable. Wallace didn't make it because he did not do the shuttles. Gray missed in the bench and actually missed in the short shuttle. He participated, but his number did not clear the mark. So I want to make a note of that.
All right. What about the interior offensive lineman look for?
Yeah, guards and centers. And for our purposes, we considered Spencer Anderson as a guard interior offensive lineman. And so from a data perspective, because it did change our criteria some, we included him in that bucket. Three guys making it in Nick Gargiulo from South Carolina, who our Tom Mee just had a profile go up on him. Maybe a later round guy, but he's got some size. Dominic Punai from Kansas, kind of a sleeper too. I think he played tackle, but he's going to probably come inside and maybe be a versatile piece for some NFL team. And then the one guy that's really notable is Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. Pittsburgh brought in for a visit earlier this week. He's got size, he's got athleticism, he's got a ton of experience. He played 70 games in college, which I didn't even know was possible, but he played 70 games. And so that's a guy that is kind of hitting all the right notes.
Was he was Shrine, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a Shrine Bowl guy, right. I think. Yeah.
All right. That's break glass in case of emergency type situation, though, because he's going to be a day three guy, isn't he?
I think he could go late day two. Wouldn't shock me just given the measurables. But he that'd be more of a maybe double dip candidate situation for Pittsburgh than a hang your hat on that guy. But notable when a guy that checks all the boxes also comes in for a visit.
All right. Okay.
And then the one box away, Tanner Bordellini missed in length. Brandon Coleman missed in bench by one rep. Zach Frazier only missed in height by less than half an inch. The benchmark was 6'3". He came in 6.025, even despite the less than maybe stellar workout numbers overall, coming off a leg injury, not training as much. He still hit every box athletically in our study, just missed in the height there. So that is certainly notable. Graham Barton missed in the hand size, and he did not do the bench vert or broad. Paris Johnson missed in the hand size as well. He did not run the 40 and did not do the shuttle drills. And so a lot of those guys were missing for hand and not participating in drills.
I would imagine. Didn't Norzad do almost everything throughout the process?
I think. Let me check on Norzad here where he missed. It looks like he didn't do a lot of stuff. I don't have him down for doing the 40, the jumps, or the shuttles. So he didn't do, I guess, much of anything according to the data that I have.
Okay. All right.
But I think Norzad's kind of their, we didn't get one of the top centers break glass in case of emergency, to use your phrase. I think that's a guy because I think they'll consider him smart and experienced and, you know, the most plug and play ready guy of the non-top three center names.
All right. Once again, my fascination with this is dwindling by the year because of some of these guys not doing everything, you know.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it's still valuable information. We're still able to assume in a lot of these positions and build, you know, 10 name lists, even with, you know, not having the perfect, you know, everybody doing everything type thing. You know, we did that with the wide receiver group the other day. They're able to rattle off a good 12, I think, or so that we feel, you know, not counting the guys that are probably being off the board and all like that, you know, to be the pick.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, even compared to a year or two ago, we're still getting roughly the same number of names in terms of a couple of names that check every box and a couple that come really close in one category. So it's still not empty. If it ever gets super empty, then I'll probably have to make some more changes to how I approach the study.
All right. Where to after the look for studies here?
That's a good question. Any final prospects you're going back to watch? I know we're getting our final scouting reports in. We are right around 300 scouting reports, wow, which is awesome. We're going to certainly hit that number if we haven't hit it already. We did 272 last year, so I'm really excited for us to have to hit 300. I mean, I'd like to think we'll have a report immediately on every Pittsburgh Steelers draft pick. I can't guarantee that, obviously, but we're getting pretty close.
Yeah, we thought we had it pretty well covered last year, and then Spencer Anderson showed up.
right. So you can never assume for sure, but we're gonna have, I mean, we have basically almost everyone who was at the combine, so that's a good place to start looking at some fourth quarterback options. We're gonna kind of go through a couple of those names to round things out. I know it doesn't mean much, I won't spend much time talking about him. The report will go up in a couple of days, but Tanner Mordecai from Wisconsin, I was watching his tape last night. I think he's a talented guy. He's got a live arm, zips the ball well, he's got some size, toughness. Coaches loved him. He was a big recruit out of high school, went to Oklahoma, was battling with Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts there, and Spencer Rattler as well, and then transferred to SMU. In 2022, he had a 9-touchdown passing performance against Houston and had a rushing touchdown in that game as well. Then went to Wisconsin. Numbers weren't super gaudy, but just interesting guy. I wonder if he could come in as a fourth quarterback, because they'll bring in a fourth guy. It'll be an undrafted free agent, won't be a super big name. I wonder if Mordecai could be that guy.
Yeah, look, because they're going to need the arms for the rookie mini camp, and they're probably going to have at least two of those. One probably undrafted, signed, and one or two tryout guys probably participate in that. So that maybe be a name to look out for after the draft. There, I do want to talk a little bit about the cornerback position here in okay. this thing. We both agree that this team's going to draft a corner, right?
I wonder if that could be the one position that gets the short end of the stick, but, you know, certainly would not surprise me if they took a corner at some point in the draft.
And if they did take one probably with some slot capability, if not all slot capability.
Yeah, based on team needs and based on the guys they brought in, all the corners they brought in, besides Wiggins, I think, have experience in the slot or are considered, you know, true slot corners.
All right. Is 84, assuming they stay put, 84 to me feels like the cut line for you better have the guy that you think can help you out. You know, in other words, a non-developmental guy. It feels like 84 needs to be that cutoff line there. When you and look, you cannot rubber stamp one draft to the next one because of, you know, certain positions being deeper than others, and, you know, just the what you just can't do it. But you can look at averages over the years, and man, when you look back over the last 5 years or so, when it comes to the cornerback position overall, by 84th pick overall, usually around 11 or 12 corners have come off the board, along with anywhere from 3 to 5 safeties.
Yeah, I mean, I think third round is where you ideally would want to get somebody. I mean, you like to get them sooner, but you're saying that about a lot of positions right now. You got to get a center by this pick and a receiver by this selection and tackle, etc. So, I mean, I think third round is where you would like it to happen, but again, you just can't get everything that you want based on Pittsburgh's current draft capital.
Right. But I mean, it to me, when you look at the list of corners and specifically the ones that the Steelers probably have their eyes on, the ones that can play inside, It does feel like, and they might even be lucky to get one of those top 11 or 12 guys that fit exactly what we deemed them looking for at 84 overall. But if they don't get them at 84 overall, waiting another 14 picks to Blake, to address the position again, it feels like it's a long wait and not guaranteed to get, you know, a guy that fits your need in there.
If they got a guy at 84, who are you circling as some of those top names?
I mean, and that's another thing that I want to talk about here is, you know, I have talked a lot about Mike Sanders still throughout this process here. And I had Ross pull up. I mean, he is undersized from the height aspect. If there's one thing that he could get dinged on is his overall height here. And I had Ross pull defensive backs in total drafted under 5'9.5" there. And there's not a lot of them that were drafted in the first three rounds, I don't think, overall. When you look at especially recent, going back to 2009, I think. I mean, those guys just now. You have a LaMarcus Joyner, I think, in 2014, at 68 inches. That's what, 5'8". He was drafted in the second round. You have Marcus Jones in 2022 at 68 inches. He was drafted in the third round. What is, you know, I guess where I'm coming in at is, as good a player as Mike Sanders still is, and the tape is, will that size end up impacting him and dropping him down into the third?
I mean, it certainly doesn't help him, but I think the projections are he'll be long gone by the time the third round rolls around. And he could even be a late first round guy for whatever it's worth. Mock draft database has him as a 49th overall. And there's a lot of mocks that have him going to Baltimore late. Again, these are just, you know, media stuff. It doesn't mean that that will happen, but I certainly would not count on him to get anywhere close to 84.
Okay. All right. That's one name that I have circle of hope and that potentially falls. Obviously, a couple of their visitors in Andrew Phillips and Max Melton fit the criteria there. I think a guy that we have not talked a lot about overall in this thing would be, hold on, let me pull up my other page here, would be, where's his name? The Louisville kid.
Brownlee?
Yeah.
Okay, I had not done much work on Jarvis Brownlee.
I think he's probably going to check a lot of your boxes there.
Okay, how much slot experience does he have? I mean, I know some guys will kick inside, but I'm just, what's his story and background?
Where did I have that listed here? Hold on a minute here.
I know Tom Meade put up the report about a week ago. He came in 5'10", 194. He apparently has played in the slot according.
Yeah, he has played a little bit in the slot there, and I think he's going to have to compete for a starting nickel slot and obviously help you out on special teams if doing that there. So, I mean, because of his size, 5 foot, depending on what you want to believe here, because he had two separate kind of really different measurements. Combining is 5'10 and 3/8, and on his pro day is 5'11 and 1/8. There. Now the weight in the hand stayed the same. The arm measurement was 1 inch different from his pro day to the combine. His wing was about a quarter of an inch different there. So, you know, not having, you got a few different measurements in there, but I think when you run the numbers on these guys, and look, he didn't run great overall either on his 40 either. So that's something that's going to ding him. Maybe that's not going to check a box. Do you have what last year's numbers were for to look for on the cornerbacks?
Sure.
I wouldn't imagine 4 or 5 1 would be enough.
It might, just based on some of the corners they drafted. Now, again, criteria is going to change because I got to plug in the new numbers on Porter and Trice, but we can just look at last year's at least. Yeah, Tom Mead actually spoke pretty highly of him in terms of, you know, run defense and physicality, and those are things attractive in the slot. And, you know, in the slot, 40 time matters a little bit less just if you're not kind of playing matching vertically as often. 4.455 or lower on the 40 was my benchmark for last year. So okay, currently, if it doesn't change, he would actually meet that requirement.
Okay. I'm trying to remember if I looked at how many college snaps he had in the slot there. Hold on a minute.
Looks like some, according to Tom, he was primarily an outside boundary corner, like true short side of the field, close side. But Tom's saying there is some slot snaps for him.
Looks like slot last year, 57 snaps there. No, that's the All-Star games. So he did, let's see, regular season snaps for him would have been slot 76 versus 277 wide. Now, he did miss a few games, I think, with injury last year. 2022 with him, it was, let's see, just 9 slot snaps overall. He mostly played wide corner, 657.
Did you say he had 57 slot snaps in the All-Star game?
Well, let me go back to All-Star. Yeah, 57.
In the slot.
He had 44. What is ASP? Is that their?
I'm not looking at it. I don't know. All-Star performance.
Well, they got two listings here. I'm trying to remember if he which All-Star games. But, I mean, he did. They got a listing.
I think it was a Shrine Bowl guy.
Let me look at the key here on there. I'm not familiar with I don't know why this won't pop up.
Or maybe Senior Bowl. He actually might have been Senior Bowl.
No, he was. I know he was Senior Bowl. Did he also did he also play in the Shrine game? He might have played in both, didn't he? Wasn't he a call-up or something?
I'm not sure. You'd have to ask one of the guys that were there.
Anyway, yeah, they have him listed as 57 total snaps between, it looks like, two games during All-Star week there.
I see. Yeah, that's a good name. Now, that's probably, we're talking 98. 119 in terms of
it would probably be after that. It would definitely be after, it feels like, after that 84th overall pick.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's a good name to mention. We haven't talked about much. I'm glad you mentioned him. I know Renardo Green was one of our picks in the mock last night. He's not played a ton in this slot, but there is some versatility and some different things you can do by moving him around, which I think can also be a possibility.
All right. And several of these other guys who went to the, at least the Senior Bowl, are probably going to miss it on the weight, what they look for. Guys like DJ James out of Auburn, Carlton Johnson out of Fresno State. We haven't had a lot of talk about Elijah Jones out of Boston College.
Yeah. Was he a slot guy too, or really more of an outside? I think he was more of an outside guy.
I think he was more of an outside guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, I know Tom, I think, had done some of the reports on some of those corners. On Brownlee,
You get a lot messier once you get past those guys like Sandra Still, Phillips, Max Melton, as far as projections and moving inside.
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
that's why I go back to, it feels like by 84th overall, you better have that guy if that's the direction you're going to go with, or else you're going to have more of a projection guy in there, because once again, you cannot rubber stamp these things, but there's going to be 11 or so corners at least off the board by the time the Steelers get to 84th overall. I mean, right. There just is.
No, I definitely understand that. And for what it's worth, Brownlee, he would have missed based on last year's criteria, which again could change in the broad, the vertical, and the three cone. But from a size standpoint, he would have checked, I think, all the boxes and a 40 time as well. So that's positive for him. I mean, there are some other slot guys you can talk about later. Daquan Hardy from Penn State. He's played outside, inside. He'll be a nickel at the NFL level. They brought in Devin Shire from Pitt, local visit, but that could be an option. Jalen Simpson from Auburn's a safety slot hybrid. So there are names. And again, I think Pittsburgh's thought is that we missed out on a top slot guy, we're going to re-sign Patrick Peterson on Monday after the draft. And have a you know, day three slot corner in there and a futures guy, and that'll be our slot, you know, depth chart for training camp.
Right. And my purpose of going down this rabbit hole wasn't so much because, yeah, obviously, look, once you get past the guys like the Max Meltons and the Phillips and the Sandra Stills, and you get into the Brown Lees and all like that, that's that next, you know, it gets more into, are you sure that guy, you know, there's going to be the process of maybe him not being, you know, a guy that you could plug and play in there.
Right. I wouldn't expect you draft Jarvis Brownlee and say, okay, that's our slot corner. They're going to have to add something else again, right? Bring back Peterson, Sullivan, another free agent, something like that. But we'll see. We'll see our cornerback criteria. Currently Brownlee wouldn't check at all, but he's not a total outlier. And whatever it's worth, last year, one of the two guys that checked every box in our cornerback study was Corey Trice. And so we see a little predictive power, obviously different body type, different type of corner, but we see kind of the predictive power of our cornerback study.
And really, once again, to even back it up even further, the whole reason I wanted to come down this hole is because it feels like if you're putting together the perfect mock draft for this team, that they better address that slot corner position by 84, assuming that one or two of the guys that fit the criteria is still on the board there, which isn't a guarantee, obviously.
How realistic do you think it is to see Max Melton be there at 84? Is that a stretch?
I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but it gets real dicey with guys like Melton and Phillips and Sandra Still to me. I mean, it's not guaranteed. No.
Sure. I'm trying to think, what is the most realistic and best name that you think has a good chance of being there at 84? Cause I don't think it's going to be Sandra Still.
To me, a best chance. No, I mean, none of those three. You're going to have to get a little help with the board, it feels like.
Yeah. So what names do you think would be there if you discount Sandra Still? And if you say no to Melton, like who, if you said, Dave, that they took a slot corner at 84, what prospect would that be?
I mean, it feels like it might be a Brownlee, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to say, I mean, what I'm getting at here is if you get the gift of one of Phillips, Melton, or Sandra Still there at 84, you got to accept the gift.
Yeah. It would be hard to ignore.
I mean, all three of them making it there. No.
Could
one of them, and I would think the only argument for Sandra Still would be him falling because of his height.
Sure, if he were to fall, I would assume that would be the main reason why.
Right. I mean, you get past then. I mean, you look at some of these Senior Bowl corners once again. I mean, Chris Abrams Drain out of Missouri is 173. Carson out of Wake Forest doesn't hit the weight. I mean, if we're just looking at it, just at that, and some of these guys, even that you rattle off here, aren't 84. Don't, you know, it would be a stretch to draft them at 84.
Yeah. I wonder if Melton could slip a bit. I know he's been ranked by a lot of draft nicks higher, and so we'll see, but slot corner, he can play outside too. I don't want to put him in just a box, but if Sanders still goes, if Phillips goes, you might get one of those slot corners to get pushed down. With his special teams background for career block punts, his, I think, aggressiveness overall, his ball skills, I could certainly see that being a name that Pittsburgh has not shown a ton of pre-draft interest in. Although, I mean, we came in for a visit, I take that back. But I wonder if that's a name at 84, if he slipped a little bit, they would take.
And look, being he was a Senior Bowl guy, if you knew all about, if you knew enough about him from the combine and Senior Bowl process, it'd be overkill to bring him. I mean, you know,
well, he did come in. I apologize. He did come in for a visit.
All right. Well, I mean, that gives you an extended look at him, you know?
Yeah. So there's obviously interest there. And they've looked at some of those top slot corners. Sanders Still did not come in, but they were at that pro day. Ikayla was there. Obviously, Tomlin Khan, Terrell Austin, I believe, was at the Michigan pro day as well. So they were at Sanders Still's place to go.
Right.
Go
if you him. Did not go to the pro day, it would make sense to bring him in if you had serious consideration with him, even right. If they were Senior Bowl. Now, Sanders Still backed out of the Senior Bowl, but they went to the pro day with him.
Yeah. I think if he's there at 51, if Sanders Still were to slip, that'd be the place to consider that. I'm not even sure he gets there, but if we're talking a place for Sanders Still, it'd be 51.
All right. My contention is if one of those guys, one of those three guys fell to 84, that's the ideal place to take them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally understand that. So yeah, again, it's interesting. Got slot corner discussions, D-line, wide receiver. I don't think they're going to wait long on a receiver. I really think round 251 is that sweet spot for receiver for where Pittsburgh, with how they generally approach things. They're a day two receiver team, not a day one receiver team. You mentioned the 17-year streak of not taking a first-round receiver, the depth of the class. You can still get a quality talent, kind of like George Pickens, where it was a quality guy that fell in the deep class. I think if you wait third round, then it gets tougher to find that receiver because depth will dry up sooner than later.
Right. If you have to wait to 84, then, you know, as deep of group as this is, that's another position that's going to come off the board quite frequently in the first two rounds and definitely by the 84th overall pick. So yeah, second round, I think we've agreed on that for a while, that second round seems to be the sweet spot.
Right. Although again, what if you take a tackle in the first round and then you want to trade up and get a center right in the second round? I mean, again, there's so many issues, so many layers to this thing that I wish it was this clean, but it's really hard to predict.
That's why it goes back to the top of the show here, saying that, man, it makes for a lot cleaner mock draft, at least from an outsider's perspective, if you go center in the first round there. I tell you, another position that's you know, trying to address everything perfectly, that seems to fall by the wayside is the defensive line spot there. And you know, I know we really have two initial names circled there in Rook, and Mason Smith there. But it that's another position that it feels like if you don't get, I mean, Rook's not going to fall to 84, right?
I wouldn't expect it. I know we say that so much, and some guys will inevitably fall, but I just don't see it happening.
Now, there, I guess there's an outside. I could make some sort of an argument that Mason Smith might be on the board at 84 overall, and really the only reason I would say behind that is maybe team's view, because last year, obviously, he made it back on the field after that 2022 knee injury. He got injured in week one of that 2022 season, only played like 8 or 9 snaps or something in that first game before he went down injured there. Just the rawness aspect of him and him not maybe having the season many thought he would have in 2023 coming back off of that injury would be reasons to wonder if teams would draft him before 84 as a true plug and play guy. You know, he's to some aspects of him, you know, obviously he played more snaps than a guy like Mims, but he, you know, there is still some rawness to him that you can make an argument that would be the reason he would fall to 84. But, you know, he's not going to, probably wouldn't make it to the Steelers' second pick in the third round at that point. And look, you look at most of these top 100 boards and mock drafts out there. I mean, Mason Smith's off the board by 84th overall just because of the defensive tackle class as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's realistic to think he would be there. Again, you can never say anything for sure. And if he's off the board at 83, then, you know, then you're screwed from that aspect.
But, if you don't have a defensive tackle, if you're the Steelers, you don't draft one by 84th overall and Mason Smith's off the board and all like that. I mean, you might as well kind of wait a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in some day three guys. You know, Crumity could be that type of guy, and maybe the sixth round, Logan Lee, we've mentioned too, and he's checking the boxes in our study. So I think there's the Baylor kid. Yeah, Gabe Paul. I don't know if they like him and they, you know, bring him in, but that's a guy that I think in the fourth round, similar to Mason Smith, developmental type of guy, would make sense.
Right. But it gets messy here when you're talking about, it feels like you're going to have to pick or choose at that, you know, let's say, and once again, what happens if you don't go tackle in the first round? Is 84 another spot where you better get a tackle if you want to tackle? You know, there are three different positions easily this team could go And look, I mean, it's no different than any other draft, I suppose. I mean, but you're trying to get all these positions in your first four picks, and especially if you know that you want to get a wide receiver in the second round, if you still have a 51st overall, not having to trade up to get a center, that's where it gets it gets real, real messy with this thing. One of these positions is going to have to wait, going to have to be put on the back burner.
Right, and we've made that point a bunch of times, and it's going to be important that you're going to come out of this draft thinking, man, they're still weak at this position. What are they going to do? We're going to be saying that about some position. What position? I don't know, but they're not going to do it all unless they were to trade back and get additional capital. My thought is, Dave, either you get a tackle in the first round or just don't draft one until late day three. Because if you get that third round guy, is he going to start? He could, but less likely. And so what is he really doing for you in the here and now? You know, if you get a third round guy, Broderick Jones still more likely than not to open the year at right tackle, Dan Moore at left tackle. I know they could take Blake Fisher and they show an interest there. But for me, a tackle at the least, it's a go big or go home type of situation.
I mean, even a Rosengarten or a Fisher, what are the chances of both those guys being on the board at 83?
Yeah, I mean,
because they're in that next tier.
Sure, they could be, but even if they are, you know, what is there great value in doing that? I mean, you could develop and hope, okay, maybe by next year, you know, Moore's gone and Jones flips over and we make that the 2025 plan. It's not the worst idea, but for me, I'm just generally, you know, they've done so much homework on the top round guys, either take a top round guy or just, you know, don't take somebody until we're late in the draft.
Is defensive lineman a luxury in the first three rounds for the Steelers?
I hate to call it a luxury because you've seen so many times last year in 2021 when you have poor D-line depth, how it impacts you. And, you know, they really want Cam Hayward to not have to play all the snaps in the world. So I think calling it a luxury, I wouldn't call it luxury.
Okay.
It's not their biggest need, but it's not luxury.
Right. I mean, at least they did go out and get a guy like Lowry.
Yeah, and Loudermilk can play the run a bit better. He improved last year. I know I'm talking myself into it. I don't want to do that. Is inside linebacker, where do you consider that? Is that a need, a want, a luxury?
Anything at that position to me in the first three, even four rounds feels like a luxury at this point due to what you did with Patrick Queen.
Do you think they draft an inside linebacker though?
I still do. I just don't think it's going to be in the first four rounds.
I think it could be. I think at 98 or 119, because why have they shown so much interest in sending Curry to those places to just draft somebody in the sixth round?
I think they're looking at if all these other positions of more need, if guys that don't check the boxes for them are gone, then they're looking at that as potential if one of those guys slide.
I don't know. I think they're looking at it because they want to upgrade. Why did they bring in Kalicki Hudson and potentially, you know, obviously there was some interest in trying to sign him. I think they want to insulate themselves and get better depth there because of how rocked and hindered they were last year. And with the uncertainty about Cole Holcomb, I think they're going to draft somebody third, fourth round.
I think I tend to think that more likelihood of them waiting
until the sixth round.
Yeah.
Okay, I wonder who that would even be. I mean, we're just at that point. There's a ton of names.
Yeah, names that were a boxer or two away, you know.
Okay.
Senior Bowl guys.
Yeah, I'd prefer they wait, but I'm getting the sense they're not gonna do it early. It's not gonna be first, second round. I think it's gonna be 98, 119 in terms of where that inside linebacker slots in.
All right. I hit on the cornerback talk there. What else? Did we mention Corey Trice being back on the field?
No, we didn't mention that. Yeah, that was further phase one of the offseason program, Trice being out there. Don't know exactly what he was doing. It was just in a photo of, I don't know, it was a conditioning drill or I forget exactly what it was. But yeah, that was a positive sign. Was there a brace or anything on his knee? I didn't even think to check and look at his knee.
Yeah, I didn't go in detail. I think the fact that he's out there is good news and whatever conditioning drills they're doing. I mean, that's a good sign there. He should be eligible to participate in the rookie mini camp, right?
I forget the rules on that. I imagine he would be for not even playing a preseason game last year. Yeah. He probably can go to rookie mini camp. Yeah.
I mean, that's only a couple of weeks away now. So that will be, you want to talk about good news. I mean, if he's out there participating fully in a rookie mini camp, that would be absolute. When did that injury happen? That was August something, wasn't it?
It was the first day in pads, so it was very early August. Yeah, there was only if there was any silver lining to the injury, as devastating as it was, especially given his history, it happened very early. And so it's going to give him, if it happened in November, then you're really trying to beat the clock to get, you know, ready for OTAs and training camp. But it happening maybe August 1st, whatever the first day in pads was, that's when he went down.
September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. I mean, that'll put him almost at the 9-month mark.
Yeah.
Just for rookie mini camp. So,
right. So he should be good for training camp at the least. I mean, I don't think we're talking pup here with anything. I mean, we'll see, but it sounds like he's in a pretty positive place.
Yeah. I'm talking 9 months just until roughly the start of rookie mini camp. You know, obviously it's not guaranteed that he'll be out there for rookie mini camp, even if he's eligible to take place with it. But by OTAs, I mean, you really got to like his chances.
Yeah, at least to do something. Maybe he won't be 100% fully clear to do everything, but obviously he's doing something now, and it's hard to tell with that video exactly the extent of what his work is, but obviously he's progressing seemingly well. Doesn't seem like he had a big setback or anything that would be hindering his availability come training camp.
Now, is he a guy that you can count on? I mean, obviously no with his injury history and all like that, but you certainly would like him to have a legitimate shot from a health standpoint this year to get out there and make this roster as a backup corner.
If one of him and Darius Rush can show something to give you depth, and again, those starting gunner jobs are there for the taking. And I know Rush did it in college and Trice has a skill set to do it. That could be their path. But if one of those guys can stick and you find something in one of those names, then I'll take that.
All right. So I just want to make sure we hit on that because it was a real positive seeing him taking part.
Sure. All right, Dave, any other final thoughts here? Do you want to get us some reader emails and close out today's show?
All right. Let's see if I can sort this out real quick for us. Here in the email machine, we have Lenny Barsikowski. Well, about your walk amok. Guys, just want to tell you both how much I enjoyed all the conversation this past week about the center and tackle positions. I love the deep dives into all the minutiae. Alex, you did a great job with the last draft. I was able to listen to our first two picks. And if we leave this draft with those two selections, that's an A+. Great job. Even if Jim Harbaugh tried to ruin your night. Dave, would you have drafted Latham if JPJ is on the board? Yeah, I mean, the way that thing fell, I mean, once again, that thing got so screwed up with those first several picks. I mean, do we expect the board to play out the way that it did for him in the walk the mock? No, I'd be surprised if it did. But it you know, I understand why Alex went the way that he went there. And he was able to trade up and ended up getting himself a center there anyway. A fun exercise, but it's one of those things, too, that you got to go into those things knowing those things can go off the rails really, really quick. And they certainly did in a number of aspects. But I just think overall, Alex did a great job. I would have said, see you guys later. I'm turning this damn thing off. I appreciate everybody showing up here. Let's see. What else do we have here? James. I just heard that the site is turning 16. Oh, yeah. We turned 16 yesterday, Alex.
We're driving. Dangerous thought. What was your first car? What was the first thing you drove, Dave?
I had a 1965 Ford Fairlane station wagon.
Oh, you were driving station wagon. Okay.
Yeah, old family.
Is that like one of those boats that were just super giant? And
yeah, it was ugly. It was ugly. that was the first one, that first car that I had. Let's see. I've been a longtime reader consumer. I remember finding you on Google when I was looking at the transition tag for Max Starks. What does it mean? He was looking for, since that article, you have been my go-to for all things financial, never too deep of a rabbit hole for me. He says, my son follows the site too. So you are multi-generational now. He says, what are you most proud of with Steelers Depot and what is your biggest regret? I think your team is the greatest accomplishment. And I regret that you never decided to get press credentials with the Steelers, though the lines have blurred with some events. What am I most proud of with Steelers Depot? Well, I'm talking to him on the other end here, I think. Alex overall. From the moment that I found him on a message board to what he's become, not only for the site, but as an individual, as a business partner, all of it. You know, I'm very, very proud of Alex, and that's really just more than just Steelers Depot. Matthew Marks, who came on the site just not too long ahead of Alex, really has played a big, big part of this as well, too. He's like a brother from another mother to me. I'm proud that he has a full-time job and has been able to help his family out with the income that he's been able to earn over the years there. And just the trickle-down effect of it. Josh Carney, Joe Clark, Ross McCorkle, Jonathan Heitritter. I mean, guys that have been, you know, guys that are full time, you know, that have full time gigs because of this thing. You know, obviously it's afforded me, you know, nice things and, you know, as well here. And I am blessed to be able to do what I do here now and all, but I think when you look at proud of moments, it's just the team and people having full time and look, I mean, even the part time, I mean, Tom Meade's been with us how long, Alex? I mean,
years.
That's a guy that's a salt of the earth guy. Dr. Mel, she's been with us so long now, and the information that we get from her, especially from the medical aspect of it, is just phenomenal. We've got several, you know, part-timers in, and we've got several other up-and-comers now on the site as well, too. So I would think that would be, you know, when you talk about, you know, what I'm most proud of, it's just the people and being able to provide full-time incomes for those people. Biggest regret? Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've made far more mistakes along the way with decision making that luckily been able to overcome. I don't know that there's one biggest regret throughout this thing. You know, Alex, what are you most proud of with Steelers Depot? And what is your biggest regret so far?
Yeah, well, no, thank you, Dave, for the kind words. I really do appreciate it and grateful that we get to do this thing every day and just talk Steelers and football and sports with you guys and be able to, you know, be an escape maybe for some and a place to educate and occasionally entertain. I think I'm just proud of us being able to, as a site, sustain. You don't see too many sites that have been around for 16 years, you know, or even half that time. Sites come and go, people come and go, and you know, a lot of times these places will fall off and the site changes and there's always this turnover and we really haven't had it to anything like that degree. So to be able to sustain and consistently show up every single day and build this thing up, you know, greater and greater every year, I think is really special and pretty uncommon for a completely independent, not supported by any sort of other conglomerate or any sort of big outlet. Like other sites are, I think it's really impressive. In terms of regret, yeah, I don't know. It's probably some behind the scenes type stuff that, you know, we're not going to probably get into in terms of just, you know, structures and things like that. But nothing that honestly comes to mind off the top of my head. I just wish the Steelers would have had more active free agencies in years past like this one, because that would have been really good for us. But no, I've been really happy with things overall.
Yeah, me as well. You know, I think a lot of people try to do what we do, but I don't think anybody does it the way we do it, you know, and I take pride in that. So appreciate that. Let's see. Lane writes in, quarterbacks and Mike Sanristil. Hope you guys are doing well. First off, what do you guys think the Steelers will do next offseason with Justin Fields if Russell Wilson plays the entire year and gets an extension? Would the Steelers really just let Fields walk out the door with Wilson only having a couple years left? Also, do you guys think Mike Sanristil will be available in the third round at pick 84? Lane, look, we just kind of talked about Sanristil there. If he lasts that long, I think it's mainly due to his height, because the tape is really good on him. And I think it's just, and it would be the fact that he is a slot only guy. But those guys do have value in today's NFL. Teams play so much sub package stuff, nowadays. So, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that Mike Sanders still will not be there in the third round. But it does feel like a lot of things will have had to happen for him to last until 84 overall when it comes to him. As far as the whole Fields thing goes here, I think, and look, it's so hard to project, you know, how Russell Wilson's going to play. Will he play the entire year? Even if he does, how great does he play? Does that end up with an extension? Yada, yada here. I will only say this about Justin Fields. And I mentioned this not soon after the Steelers traded for him. If I'm Omar Khan, I am trying my best to work out some sort of happy medium, maybe with Fields and his agent, even if it's just a 1 year extension. From a cash and a cap standpoint, the team can make that happen this offseason, depending on the price when it comes to him. And I don't think you're going to upset Russell Wilson if that number comes in around, I don't know, $7, $8 million average yearly value of the new money, because obviously Russell Wilson is going to get his big chunk of money from the Broncos when it comes to that. And Russell Wilson's going to have to decide if Russell Wilson is this team's quarterback past 2024. And obviously, if he plays good enough, he's going to get paid big time by somebody on top of that. I really think the biggest thing, especially the way the cash spending has gone, or in this case, not gone so far this offseason, I mean, is it totally out of the question, Alex, for this team to go to Justin Fields and work out some sort of happy medium to at least get him under contract for 2025?
I mean, I've mentioned this before. I don't think it's unreasonable from Pittsburgh's aspect. I think there's a little concern. There's no quarterbacks under contract for 2025. Again, assuming that Fields' fifth-year option is declined, which it almost certainly will be. I just go back, and I could be wrong. I've been wrong about some of this stuff before with extensions with Trubisky this past offseason, for example. But what is the big incentive for Fields to lock himself down for another year? Because what if Wilson has a fantastic season, Fields is the backup, barely plays, Wilson gets a four-year extension, now Fields is cemented as the backup? I mean, there were worse things to be, I guess. But I just wonder, you know, from Fields' side, what if he plays this year out and, again, hypothetically, let's say that Wilson struggles, Fields comes in, has a great season. Now we're talking about a big extension. So I just wonder about kind of locking yourself in right now when you just joined this team.
Sure. And that's the big counter argument to this is, why would he even do a deal at this point for $7-8 million or whatever you come into? You know, obviously there has to be a financial figures a line somewhere that would make it worth him signing on for one more year. Now, look, he also run the risk of not playing hardly any in 2024, hitting free agency and being back in the same spot that he was in this offseason, so to speak.
Sure, that's fair.
I don't know what the number is, but there has to be a meeting point where it would, you know, potentially be great for both sides. Or good for both sides.
Yeah, there could be. I don't know. I mean,
is it more unlikely to happen than likely to happen? Absolutely. But what I said initially here, I think you at least explore it with him and his agent to see what is the price for that to get you under contract for another year.
Yeah, if they can, great. I'm not opposed to it. If they want to explore it, I think it's smart to do that, to have the conversation. Worst is, nothing happens. You're in the same spot you would be if you didn't talk to him in the first place. So no harm in doing that. I'm just skeptical from Fields' angle of, and he just got here. Right. I'm sure he's happy to be here. You know, he's happy to be in Pittsburgh. But I don't know if you want to, even with Trubisky, like, he was at least, they knew him, he knew them. There was more of an appetite to probably get a long-term deal or get an extension done. And you can even see how that worked out. So my guess is no, but I'll wait and see.
All right. So what do you do? Let's go back to Lane's question here. What will do next offseason with Justin Fields if Russell Wilson plays the entire year and gets an extension?
then yeah, Fields may walk. And if he walks, then again, what did you give up for him? At that point, I assume the condition won't be met. So you'll have given up a 6th-round pick in 2025. If that's how it plays out, that Wilson does really well, has a great year and gets an extension, I'm happy overall.
All right, let's go to Joe Glusko. That sounds like a new name to us. I'll keep this one short. How do you rank the day one caliber tackles in this draft? And also, if Broderick Jones was coming out this year, where do you think he ranks amongst them? Where do you rank the kind of the true tackles? I think we sort of almost went through that exercise earlier in the show here. I think Alt is the leader, unquestionably. I think he's the top tackle in this year's class. After that, let me pull up my list here.
I mean, you got Fashanu.
Yeah, Fashanu to me is number two, unquestionably. I view Fontenot as more of a guard. I'm not going to tie my wagon to him as a true tackle. So I would probably, and Fuaga, I have Latham ahead of Fuaga, and then Mims. So it would go Alt, Fashanu, Latham, really just as Dane Brugler has him. Maybe Mims ahead of Fuaga just because of long term upside and all like that. But I mean, those would be the top five.
I think for me, again, I know I say it all the time with Mims on the experience, I'd put him as my third best tackle. I'll bank on the traits and that the inexperience is not going to be a hindrance to him, even if there is going to be a bit more developmental time required for him. But I think the upside is just insane. And at his best, he is maybe the best pure talent of any tackle in this class, even above a Joe Alt, just in terms of if they hit their ceilings, then I think, you know, he's right up there with anybody. I think Fuaga to me is more of a guard type. Just watching his tape, I looked at him and the lack of length out on the edge, I think creates some issues on some of those speed rushers. I do like his feet, his hands, the energy in which he plays with, a decent athlete, a pretty good athlete overall. But I think I like him a bit more inside. And Fontenot, yeah, I just, you know, again, for Pittsburgh, I'm not entirely sure what you do with him if he did become the draft pick.
Where would you rank Broderick Jones in this group? And unfortunately, we have bias of one full NFL season, so to speak, really, you know, overall. Obviously, he didn't play the full season, but we got enough tape on him.
Who wrote the scatter report? This is everything kind of gets lost. Did I write the report on Jones last year? I'm trying to think who wrote the report on Broderick Jones, the official report. Because we have our grading system, and I asked that because we like to now, hopefully within some time, be able to kind of quantify ranking players. I know grades can, you know, trying to change year to year and there's still subjectivity to it. No, I didn't write the report on Broderick Jones last year. I'm just curious what grade we gave him. I think I'd probably put Jones higher on that list, maybe in that
second or third to me.
Yeah. Again, compared to Mims, we had an 8.7 on him for whatever that's worth last year. I don't know. It's so tough for me to compare classes. And if I haven't read the official report on all those guys to have, you know, here's my grade on this guy and this guy and this guy. It's probably tougher to do, but I'd put him ahead of Fontenot, ahead of Fuaga. He'd come in probably around. Maybe second to fourth, I don't know, somewhere in that range.
Right. I mean, he'd definitely be top five. He'd definitely be a first round pick.
Yeah, he would be.
All right. Maybe I get to one more here. Let's see real quick here.
And then we will have just a quick programming note. We'll have our draft a little uncertain on next week's format because Tomlin and Khan will speak. We think Monday, it's not been confirmed. We'll have our draft roundtable at some point Sunday, Monday. That may get pushed to a Tuesday special edition because it'll be such a long episode. And then Dave and I will recap what Tomlin and Khan have to say. So that roundtable will come out just as a note Monday or Tuesday.
All right. One last one from Chris Lookart here. Is it time for the Steelers defense to maybe get away from the 3-4 front because they have such a hard time finding the right size defensive ends? I feel like if they went to a 4-3, it might be a little easier for them these days.
We get asked that a lot. I mean, lines have blurred between 3-4, 4-3. I get from the standpoint of what they look for in the defensive end. Those standards may be changing slightly too. No, I'm fine with the system. I think those guys do exist. I think they are harder to find, sure. But, you know, you got TJ Watt doing his thing. And as long as Watt's here and Cam's here for now, I'm not really showing an appetite to change things right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, me either here. I think what you're going to have to see, though, is probably even as early as next year is your first round pick. It's probably going to have to, you know, whatever one or two perfect fits are out there for that type of Cam Hayward-ish type player, you better go get them early.
Yeah, no question about that.
All right. We are almost, an hour, 45 minutes here, whatnot. Anything else to wrap up with?
No, we'll come back Monday. Again, a little uncertain how the Monday show will go. If Tomlin and Khan do speak Monday, then the Monday show will come out later because we're going to obviously listen to that, write about it, and then talk about it afterwards. So just be aware there might be a little bit of change in schedule for next week.
All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we're doing, want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button, upper right navigational bar, and follow the directions that way. So appreciate everybody. As always, appreciate all the support you gave Alex during the Walk the Mock. That was incredible to watch that to play out. And specifically, the way Alex handled it, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Patience of Job, if you will, there. So until next time, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.